As always, this show is brought to you by Mass Monopoly. We're an adventure sports agency focused on fueling the brands that fuel us. Everyone here is an adventure athlete of some sort and is active in some or all the sports that we support. We help build adventure brands through authentic, value-based marketing, not disruptive or interruptive, annoying-based stuff, growing your business without selling your soul. Go to massmonopoly.com for a free consultation. We're also brought to you by 508 Adventure Sports. 508 is a family-run business who want to keep adventure sports affordable for families. They manufacture and sell handcrafted hard goods like skateboards, mudguards, and more. They also source affordable quality accessories for the sports they love, like mountain biking gloves, skateboarding pads, helmets, hiking equipment, and all kinds of stuff to keep you and your family out on adventures in all four seasons without breaking the bank. Check them out at 508.com, F-I-V-E, the letter O, the number 8.com. My guest today is Mickey Cormier, and we got together to talk about content in marketing, and we did. We talked about content. We bitched about common downfalls in the industry. We talked about augmented reality and got into all kinds of stuff, looped it back to content miraculously, and had a really good time just generally chatting about marketing stuff. So hope you enjoy. Let's get to it.
Oh my god.
Oh, how do I sound?
Like your microphone. You sound like your microphone is plugged in. Could it be?
Listen.
I'm not going to listen.
Listen. This is a tricky little thing I've got here, this cord.
I know it's
got to wiggle it just so.
Those and USB I've got it cords. Like, very hard to work. You got to
put it into the receiving. That's not how this one works. It's not that. It's like it has to sit in a certain spot and like move a certain way and be like.
Sure it does.
I am going to take a picture of this thing and send it to you to see what kind of like weird, you know, like yoga pose I had to put the cord into to make this connect. Mm. It's nuts. Yep. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, but here we are. Let's not dwell on what could have been.
Let's not dwell on the past.
All right. Let's not dwell on my technical difficulties. And I've even forgotten now. I was like so into trying to get this thing to work. What we were even talking about. I think I was talking about we should talk about some content questions. But I mean, we can talk about anything really.
We could talk about anything. I don't really care. I'm down for whatever.
Whatever, huh? Except waiting on me and my cord.
Yeah, that part's not fun.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I honestly think your cord's fine. I think you just do it to leave me sitting and waiting. I think it's a power play because you're always trying to like dominate people and take over and hurt folks. So I think that's just another one of your – basically it's a violent act against me even though there's no physical act perpetrated. Yeah. I think I pretty much think it's violence.
Yeah, you know, you've really hit the nail on the head there, didn't you? You just totally caught me out. Boom.
Summed up. That's it. Yep. People who know you are like, you know, nailed it. That's her.
Can't stop. I'm caught. Oh, no. Oh, boy.
How's your beer?
You know what I opted for instead of a beer? I opted for some cold brew that I made. So that's what's in the glass right now.
That's pretty lame.
What do you mean it's pretty lame? It's delicious.
Not compared to beer, it's not.
Hmm. But I did end up getting that Angelica beer.
Yeah, those Lord Hobo dudes, they make some good beer.
Yo, Lord Hobo, thumbs up to you guys. That Angelica beer is like my new favorite thing.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
I had a friend over and I had like just the last two in the fridge.
You have friends?
I have some friends, or, you know, I call them friends. I don't know. They're just people that come over, they eat my food, they drink my beer, and they leave.
Do you pay them?
You know what? In beer, I do, because the guy, my so-called friend, went into my fridge and grabbed the Angelica of all the beer. Like, I've got, like, a ton of silly beer in there from people, like, coming over. They, oh, here, I brought you some beer. I'm like, great.
You had to take the one?
He took the one.
Like, come on.
Seriously, how does somebody do that, right? Out of all the planets in there.
Who is this guy? Give me his name, address.
What the heck, right? Oh my God. I turn around and it's already like in his to his lips. Like, so what can I do now? You know? I'm like, oh,
dirty bastard.
I hope you're enjoying that, man.
Because I sure plan to.
I wanted to so bad.
So you wanted to talk about content? What about content?
I don't know. Like, you know, the differences between what people think, what the universe, outside of us, of course, thinks content is, and what content actually is. Like, to the user, the person that the so-called content is created for. There's like a, I've found that there's a discrepancy in what people think content is that are clients of ours, or were clients of ours, people we've done work for, mm-hmm. that start, you know, like, oh yeah, we do our own content, and which is, you know, on one hand, that's kind of awesome. Great for you. You can do your own content. Most of the time, though, what I find is that these people who say they do their own content don't really understand what that means. They're either not putting out enough of content. It's not the right kind of content, or it's a limited kind of content that isn't actually speaking to the audience in the way that it should. And it's not all connected. Like, there's no cohesiveness.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue that I've come across a lot. And I think that two of the things you said are what really, really sum it up. And there's A, they think they're going to make their content, but they can't keep up with it. So they don't make enough. There's not enough coming out to have any impact on the business. So they say, yeah, I know it's important. I know we need to do it. We're going to do it. We're making it a priority. And then they don't do it. And then it's not happening. And then the second one is when they do go and do it, they have all these great discussions about authentic content and who their market is and what they need to talk about and how they have these great subject matter experts that can talk about it. And then they go and write like corporate gobbledygook blog posts and call that their content where nobody's going to read it. It's overly polished. It's like a boring white paper or article instead of being content about whatever the subject might be. And it's just, I mean, might as well not do it. Now it's just useless.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, most of the discussions around content, what I'm finding is, we can do content. You know, that's the thing that comes out. And then the next thing you look at the content and then you see that what the content really is a newsletter or it's a press release, of course. And while those are forms of content, that's so not what we're talking about at all. When we're talking about something that faces an audience, you know, who you're trying to influence or educate or help or any one of those things, pick one of those things, you know, and communicate to, that's not what they want to. It's almost as if some people are using their content spaces as ways to talk to themselves in an out loud way. It's like, you're being a little crazy, man. You know, you're talking to yourself. And now everyone else can hear you too. This is not a good thing. It's not
right.
A good
like thing. If I had to talk about what it is that I do that makes me do stuff, what would I say? As opposed to they forget that content, even though it's one way, is a two way street, and they don't write, or this doesn't have to be written either. It doesn't have to be blog. It could be a podcast. It could be a video blog or whatever it might be. But they don't do the content from the perspective of if I were sitting with the person on the other end, what would I say to them? What would I be talking about with them and forming the content around that discussion, that dialogue, that what does that person want to hear from me? Not what am I going to write to make it sound like I know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And then of course it has to also do about, well, what is that content? Like, what are you saying in this content, right? The content needs to be crafted in a way that speaks to that particular audience. And that, to be honest, sounds so simple. Well, we know our fan base. We know our audience or our customer. And that may be true. Maybe the marketer does, but not everybody else does. I think that there is some sort of a weirdo disconnect that happens when the individuals who are using the site to do product or whatever, they miss the boat entirely on that other part that makes people want to know about who you are and why they should be using this product. That whole conversation gets lost, and I'm not sure where it goes.
Yeah, I think kind of what we're saying, and we're getting deep into where they end up with content that's no good, even if they're working on it. It comes back to the, if you're not focused on doing content the right way or appropriately, you run into this problem where you're building content for the sake of content, regardless of the reason for creating the content. So if you're just creating lame content to fill up your responsibility that you're supposed to be creating content, in other words, I have to have a blog go out once a week, so I'm just dumping it out, I'm creating the content. That content's not going to resonate with anybody because there's no purpose behind it. There's no heart behind it. If you're going to get into content marketing, I think you have to first be ready to put the commitment behind creating content that's going to resonate with people. It's not just putting out content. That's not good enough. That's going to fall on deaf ears because Google's not going to care. Never mind serving it up to anyone else who might care.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think part of that problem too, right? It falls into like this little nebulous space that, like, you know, oh, I'm going to a formula, right? They start looking at things like it's a formula. Well, we have a blog, so there's your content right there, and we have product pages, and that has content on it. So I don't understand. What are you talking about? And, you know, I think what you need to do is really look around at what you're doing for like how many kinds of different content areas are actually going out. Video is one of those, because that's content, right? So, but what's the video saying? What is it doing? Where does it lead? How does it lead you there? And then, you know, how is it communicating? And you have to go through all of these channels, right? Look at the blog. Does anyone visit the blog? Why do they visit the blog? How long do they stay on the blog? What stories or posts do they like to look at? So is it working for you? Maybe we should try something. You know what I mean? It's all about looking and evaluating and testing and revising on all of the content that you might actually already have out there, and always improving upon it. It's like a never ending kind of a cycle thing. You know, people, while content's great and it exists forever in the web, and any content I think is still better than no content, obviously. But it's what's missed is that opportunity to take that content and then move it one peg up, like take it one step further, do more things with it, build on it, refine it, change the channel. Like if we're taking a look at just us, as like, you know, two weirdos in a business proposition here trying to make business, and we've got a blog. Now, how many, you know, yeah, we don't spend a lot of time writing about things in the blog. We know what we found, I think, in this other vehicle that we've got here, where we're actually having a conversation about something that could be a blog, right? And this is like, this works better. We're more consistent with it. I think it's more interesting. I think we've been getting some really good response from it. People seem to be like more interested in this as a vehicle, as a way to talk about things. And so this content podcast is like a cool thing. But if we hadn't tried, we would never, you know what I mean? If we hadn't looked at how we were doing it previously, if we haven't made those decisions, you know, you don't know what you don't know, right? So you need to try things. I think people get stuck in like these little formulas of, well, we have this checkbox, we have this checkbox, we have this other thing checkbox, so we're all set.
Yeah, so they don't find what's right for them, or what mix is ultimately going to be right for them and for the who they're trying to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. So like, yeah, exactly.
So, if somebody does want to do it in-house, because not everybody can afford to pay people to make content and do it, you know, with an agency or with a service like ours, what do you think people have to do besides from exploring a lot? How do they have to fall? How do they not fall prey to that boring, generic content trap? I can just point myself to anyone that I can think of making internal content, and it turns out, if I were to have a talk with that marketing director or that person that I have spoken with, you know, even on like our clients, I have that great authentic talk, and they understand all of this stuff on a surface level. But then what gets pumped out of the machine is generic stuff.
Yeah. It's almost unavoidable, isn't it? I think it's really difficult. I think it happens in any organization. In creatives, it happens particularly when you aren't pushed. You know what I mean? You get, mm-hmm. as humans, you sort of get comfortable and you start to coast because things are working. And what's that adage, you know, don't mess with it because it's not broken, kind of a thing. The thing is, what you're not realizing is kind of broken. Anything that isn't moving you forward, in even if it's incrementally, is a broken system. Because what you don't want is lethargy. You don't want to sit there in the same space and spin, because that doesn't move you. That doesn't move anything. It moves nobody forward, right? The business doesn't go forward. You don't get any further with your audience. They don't get more engaged. If anything, humans always tend to have the smallest span of attention for repetitive sameness. And so they start to move along, you know, after a while. They're like, well, there's nothing new here for me. And they go, you know? But you don't want them. What you don't want is for them to leave, because once they've gone, it's really hard to get them back.
Yeah, they're almost gone forever.
Exactly. I think that's a problem.
I think part of what you're saying is it's not necessarily a solution, but it's at least being aware of the problem, that it's not that people don't understand that authenticity breeds good content. It's not that they are unaware of what it takes to make something work better. But what happens is you fall into the it's not just being comfy, but it's having everything become a process, which the larger the organization, everything gets boiled down to a process and a schedule and a time frame and how things work. So if you start even something that takes yeah, you have to kind of have some passion behind it. Like, let's say you start a podcast and you start talking, and it's really exciting at first. But then it becomes every Wednesday at 3 o'clock, we podcast for an hour about something. That becomes a process. And anything that becomes a process removes the emotion from it. It becomes now just one plus one equals two. And I think that's one of those traps you fall into regardless of what you do. But specifically when we're talking about content, whether it's a blog or a podcast or a television show or whatever it is you're creating, if you forget why you're creating it and you just create for the sake of creating it because you owe a deliverable, it's going to lose its soul. And then it's not going to be interesting to the audience that once was captured by it. So what were we talking about? We don't know.
No, well, we were talking about content, and we were talking initially about what the differences in content are. Like, we got to a place in the conversation where we started to talk about different kinds of content and its quality.
Before you go on, we should probably tell everyone that our recording software just cut us off, and it's been like a half an hour of troubles between then and now to get the conversation going again. So while for everyone else it was a blip and a odd restarting conversation, we don't know what we were talking about because it was like 30 minutes ago, and we're starting over. So here we go.
So, and take 3,000 and more. No. Yeah, I think content is always going to be the driving force for conversation, obviously, or to initiate conversation with an audience. So if you are someone wanting to gain an audience, grab an audience, get fans, get users or customers, then it's all reliant in the digital space, or any space, actually, it's all reliant upon your content. And right now, I think a lot of people do a lot of cruising through their content. They go into sort of a coast mode, and they check off the boxes. And so there's content up there that fits the criteria of what content is supposed to be, if it's in the driest sort of technical sense. But the quality of the content and its targeted nature, who it's talking to, isn't being addressed or looked at or valued, for that matter. I think that, people think that if you write a couple of blogs a month, it doesn't matter what they say or what they're about. And, you know, a press release is not a blog, you know, a news article where you're talking about your company, but you're really talking to yourself. So you're sort of a bit of an echo chamber that you've created isn't talking to the audience. The audience right. doesn't really care about that. That's not the kind of content that we're talking about. We're talking about content that has a quality to it. It is engaging. It's an experiential. It's storytelling. It's a whole bunch of a mishmash of things that happen between that are intimate, or at least, you know, trying to be intimate with you and the audience that you're speaking to.
Yeah, I think all too often people assume their content needs to talk about their company and then maybe their company and how it helps people, but that's not it. Your content needs to address specific things for why your audience or your viewer, whatever the person looking at the type of content is, however they might relate back to your company. You know, if you sell cars, you don't just want to make a blog about your car. You want to make a blog about how cars help people get places, how cars help people have fun, how cars help families go to take kids to school, how, you know, there's different ways in which you use a car that makes me, a car driver, want one or want to learn more about how I might use it. And that's where you want to connect with people, is how are you going to affect their life? Not that you are, or more about your company and its inner workings.
You know, I think a lot of people, a lot of people that are creating content that have products or companies where they're trying to influence, you know, the consumer, and we want you to buy our things, right? Because we're the best things, or whatever it is. The antithesis. It's like an anti-instinct, okay, to try to talk about the market that they're in and make it about the consumer, where they may actually end up not being the best thing in that space. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. It can't be a sales pitch.
Yeah, exactly. So you, the authenticity of what you're saying is going to have to come through. So, right. So let's say you do, there's like a string of things that you could possibly do. There's, you know, A, B, and C. Only you do A and C really well, but you really don't do B very well. And you know what? You could actually have a great conversation about, you know, who does B well and how you work with those people that do B well. Mm-hmm. And that helps the consumer love you even more because you're being authentic and real with them. You're not saying you can do A, B, and C. You're saying, hey, we do really, really great at A and C. This is our thing.
Yep.
And we don't, you know, here are some other ways you can add in the B to this A and C thing that we do, and just own it. Be, you know, be awesome at helping versus, you know, trying to fake it out with saying, hey, we do everything awesome.
Yeah. And I think that's where people fall, right? The bigger of an organization you're into, and with the more structure, so when you've got your boss and their boss and their boss, and you have to answer to why you're doing things. If you have a really numbers driven or metrics driven company, and they're saying, well, we're spending all this money on content marketing, where's the sales, or what are we doing? Show me the content that's making that. And you never get a chance to actually establish just content that does and will ultimately yield those sales because of the connection with the consumers. But if all too often, I think right away, it's, well, what do we get for this? What is the content trying to sell? What is it? It all goes back to a sales pitch. That means it's doomed from the get-go. So it never gets a chance to even get off the ground.
Right, right, right. Because it's too closely knitted to an actual metric.
Right.
Sales metric. I see.
Yes. So it all comes out salesy. It all comes out to be sales as opposed to being helpful content, which is what's going to actually make sales. That being helpful is going to sell things. But people are... especially in larger companies, it gets lost because you can't explain the where, why are we doing it? How does it affect the bottom line? I mean, you can, but a lot of people won't listen. They won't listen to it. They think it's too hoity-toity or too ethereal. It's not real. How, you know, that's not going to affect sales. We're not doing it. And they kill it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, in fact, everything about marketing really has to, really is about, or sales for that matter, it's about understanding the audience that you're talking to. You want to be able to understand why they're doing what they're doing. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, and this goes back to those buzzwords like UX and UI. It's the same thing. It's understanding the psychology of the human, in specific, the audience, your particular audience. So you have to sort of imagine yourself being that person. What is it that person wants or needs? And that is so hard to take yourself and do a hard look and take it outside your environment, your corporate bubble or your company space, and look at it like someone who's actually going to use that product. What exactly is it that they want? I think that's where a lot of smaller companies, they do actually a better job at connecting with the consumer, their fan base, because they've developed whatever they've developed in an environment where they were a consumer and they saw something that maybe was lacking. And so they're filling kind of a void, and they're doing that. That is a successful model because they're actually filling a void. They're actually looking at how someone wants to use something or do something and then addressing that as a pain point or a problem.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's also the second layer where the smaller companies, they are more closely connected to the consumer, but they also have less bureaucracy that's piling layers of answering, why am I doing this to people, that takes the effectiveness out. So like if we're trying to help somebody that is stuck in that, how do you have that discussion? I mean, everyone goes through this all the time, but how do you actually have that discussion successfully? So you're on the hook for marketing. Marketing is supposed to bring leads for sales. You're supposed to be increasing numbers. The boss is a numbers guy, the big boss. How do you have the conversation around authentic, value-based content that we can put out as a brand because we serve a niche? How do you have that? Or hell, you just go rogue and you do it for, you do it for 6 months and don't talk about it until you've got the results. If you can somehow hide a budget or something and get it done, you know, is that what you do? And then you say, look, I've been doing this non-sales driven, authentic, just, you know, this podcast or blog or combination of the two or whatever the content might be. And we're having really great results. And look, it's led to this many leads or this many sales on, you know, widgets over that time.
I, you know what? I really think that going rogue is probably the best answer, depending if you're like in a big organization and you got to show a metric for everything, then the analytics will bear out. Once you go rogue and you do some actual authentic pieces, we've seen it happen actually, you know, where we've built something that was authentic and useful that a client didn't have. And within 6 to 8 months, there was analytics, there was actual hard evidence. And we created a report that showed, look, if this produced, admissions and leads and look what, you know, and that report then, you know, gets taken as evidence of something that works. And what you hope, right, is that evidence then just reinforces, okay, well, if we then take a budget and actually apply, you know, to that some real force, money, thoughtfulness, look, imagine what we could possibly do. But I think you're right. I think it comes down to analytics. And I think that just because it's what we're talking about is ethereal and touchy-feely, I think that it still is provable with analytics and with stats. And the thing is, the only way to start that happening is to actually do it, though, because we can talk about it all you want, you know?
I think you're right. And why is it so touchy-feely or ethereal? I mean, I think universally across marketing, people understand that content connects with people. Content is effective. And even that content begets leads. It makes things happen. So why is it that it gets an eye roll, or it gets a, you know, it gets just kind of pushed off into the corner? Oh, whatever, you know, try it. Nobody at the higher ups or the why does this problem keep happening to organizations?
I don't know. You know, it's a hard thing to actually explain. Design has the same issue, right? Design gets that same eye roll, like, oh, you know, fluffy surface, not serious, perceptive, you know, it's not hard number based. But in fact, 94% of all first impressions are based, that humans have, are based on design. They are. That is a stat. Sure. That's like actual factual stat. I have no idea why then when you say design, all of a sudden you're in this subjective weirdo space where, you know, you're just, you know, you're not talking real for some reason. It's
right.
It's fascinating.
Everybody gets that a well-crafted experience, be it digital or outside of digital in the real world, like a nice leather car seat feels a lot different than an old 1984 cloth bench seat, right? We understand the experience that a person has changes their opinion of things, and that there are different levels of experiences, and that transcends into digital too, where you've got some old piece of shit website from 1982 that won't load and it's all weird, wonky on the screen. That's a lot different than something that's fast and gives you the information you need really easily and blah, blah, blah. And everyone gets that, at least on some levels. They think about it. They've had bad experiences and good. And it was that user experience that made them form their opinion. So why is it that we expect those good user experiences to happen by accident, as opposed to hiring or trusting in professional designers who their career is making good user experiences?
That will always be a mystery that I will never be able to solve. I think that once someone does have a good design experience, or a good experience at all with any agency, studio, art house, marketing house, when someone has a really good experience, and it can be that experience can be borne out in statistics, usually, now this isn't always the case, but usually there is some mutual respect that happens there that then says, oh, this actually worked. I mean, how could it not have? But, you know, I think that what happens is there's just a lot of really bad experiences out there right now. and right now I don't think people know the difference, or they do. But I don't know what's happening. I don't know how they attribute it to something else. They're not attributing it to design, and they're not attributing it to the quality of the content. They're attributing it to something else that's, I can't understand. That's not actually factual. You know,
I know. I feel like we're off on this bitch session about
what we
do now. But at the same time, these are things that, you know, piss me off and frustrate me. And you see it time and time again. And you see decisions get made, and then the decisions come back to haunt folks. Like, I feel like too often people make a decision to cut costs on the making of something they've decided to make, versus weighing the cost of the consumers or customers they're going to lose by creating the poor performing experience and delivering that to people, right? So they say, well, sure, but this company was going to cost X amount of money to do it, and they have this great design and everything was awesome. But this company over here, sure, nothing looked all that good, and there were spelling errors in their presentation, and they got our logo wrong in their presentation, but they cost a lot less, so we're just going to make that and call it good enough. And they don't weigh the cost of all the customers they're going to lose in the, you know, first two-thirds of a second when they deliver the experience and it's bad.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that I think you're absolutely right. They don't see, they're like, oh, well, you know, It'll be fine. No one's going to notice. They don't know the difference. It's still content. It's fine. It's all fine. No, you know what I mean? They, it's the same, it's similar enough. And so, you know, and it's cheaper. I mean, really, I mean, what you're saying and what it comes down to, right, is that the, and this happens in all parts of our business, what it comes down to is that it's a cheaper, it's about the dollar. It's about how much did it cost and how much we're willing to spend on this portion of our business. And for some bizarre reason, digital is still in the proverbial doghouse when it comes to getting that portion of the budget, right? I mean, I think people are still spending, for some reason, they can drop hundreds of thousands of dollars, right, on a commercial for a TV spot that maybe 2% of the audience is actually going to see, because we have all these other devices that skip commercials, that don't record commercials.
That we look at while commercials are on.
Exactly. Right. Commercial goes on, button mute goes on. Even if you had like just were watching regular old everyday TV, which hardly anyone does anyway.
No.
Right. So you are spending a ton of money on something that no longer is seen by that huge bunch of people that it used to be seen as, nor is it then making the same mark on those individuals. Like, but you haven't changed. So while that space changed, you haven't changed the way that you allocate your budgets. It makes no sense. And at some point, something is going to have to break. I mean,
right. And they don't change their behavior, but they expect a different outcome. You know, I'm just assuming that the people who are heading up projects in this manner, and we see this all the time. This is not like a thing that happens once or twice. The people who are heading them up this way do so often. So that means that you would think that often they end up with failed projects. So why wouldn't they at least do like a postmortem, figure out what screwed the pooch and take a different approach to it? Instead, they always just take that hard line. And you know, not everybody does. This isn't a thing every company does, but this is common enough that we're clearly somehow zeroed in on this topic, you know, half an hour into this discussion. So it's real, and it's real enough, and we've been through it enough throughout various careers. What I'm wondering is, and I'm not really wondering this, but so instead, types of companies, do you just focus on selling the fix to their broken problem instead of trying to talk about doing it right? You know what I mean? Talk about the after. Like, well, you know, we saw that you launched this and it sucks here, here, and here. We could fix all of that. And it's probably costing you this to lose the amount of customers. I mean, I would never want to sit in some kind of cycle like that and try to focus on broken stuff. But you know what I mean? Like, once it's bleeding or once it's launched and it's not working, do you have better luck talking to that person who was just about the Benjamins?
Yeah. You know what? You would think so. I think I'm afraid, and maybe I'm wrong, you know, maybe I'm just being a cynical ass because that's possible. But you know what? I feel like they see it get broken and then it becomes a thing that just, it didn't work. Therefore, I am not going to spend any more time on it. I'm going to move on and do something else. Now, on one hand, all right, maybe that was the right decision because what you spent your money on was broken and it wasn't working because it was the wrong answer. But I don't think there's time spent on figuring out whether or not what they did, what channel they were working in, mm-hmm. was the right or wrong answer. What I think actually happens is a more human thing. Oh, it didn't work. We won't do that again. Let's do some, we'll take budget away from there and we'll do something else. Because I know I get response from doing radio. So I'm going to go put it back in radio because this didn't work.
Mm.
Instead of saying, okay, well, why didn't this work? Is it the channel? Is it like the thing that I did that is like, there's not a deep conversation I'm thinking that happens. I think what happens is there's like a burnt feeling that happens. So there's an ouchie. And then, you know, I'm just never going to touch that flame again. Because that flame is evil, and so I'm not going to touch it.
And yeah, I guess. And there's that human response, right, where that didn't work, but it's not my fault, and it's not your fault. Just,
right.
let's blame the medium, and let's move on without looking into why it actually failed. Let's not Let's not find out if we made some bad choices. Let's just
exactly
never talk about this again.
Stupid internet.
Sweep it under the rug.
Stupid interwebs breaking everything I make all the time. Stupid. Yeah, essentially. Yeah, that's what I think happens. And I don't think anyone would actually admit to that, but that I think is really what's happening.
I wish we had a live audience because you didn't call me out and I thought you were going to when I actually said somebody that was all about the Benjamins as if that was a thing I would actually say. And I think that people would have harassed me if there were actually people sitting here when I said that, taunting me already.
I just thought I could gloss over it.
I knew I could tell you.
You would just never mention it again. And then no, you couldn't let it go, could you?
I said it in order to be made fun of, and you just basically treated me like a person who made a misstep, and you were being nice.
I am being nice. By being foolish. Nice,
I know.
Foolish,
I didn't like it.
Foolish, Mickey. Foolish.
I feel like you should make fun of me for a while, but you can do that later.
I can, and I will, and it will happen. I think. Yeah.
Oh, don't I know it?
Yep. Yeah. Well, you picked me, so too bad. Now you're stuck with me.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's, I was like, do we change? How can we change that behavior? I don't know if that's something that any one individual can actually tackle. I think what happens as we move forward in our futures is that we just make sure that when we are doing something, it is hopefully as awesome a solution as it can be. I think what we do is just be honest. So if someone is going to suggest, we'd like to make, you know, this whirly gig, whatchamacallit, for the web, we say, okay, that's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea, except I don't think this idea works for you. I think your thing is going to be this other thing, you know, or, and just be like real with them.
Yeah. Or like another thing that, it sucks, but I'm way more comfortable with if you get into a great discussion about this thing that's going to be awesome, and then you get a little bit down the road and it all changes because of, you know, that budget curmudgeon that's up there with the hammer, that so it was going to be this amazing experience and now that's dialed back to 50% of what it was, but it still has the same goals and they're still expecting the same thing out of it. At that point, I don't think you can do anything but say, look, I'm sorry, with this new limitations, this isn't going to work. And I can't help you play in this playground. I got to go. I can't be a part of this because it's going to fail. And I think you're off to a rude awakening, and you just have to bow out, because if you stay along for the ride to something that's going to be sabotaged, it's not,
we're subpar. Yeah.
There's no win. There's no win for it, right? All you're going to do is now you're going to create a subpar experience. You're going to create something that isn't going to work. And even though they gave you the direction and they gave you, meaning like us or the agency or whoever they hired to make something, they gave you the direction. They gave you the parameters. They're then going to blame you that it didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, and fault on the agency or the group or the studio or whoever that says, yeah, we'll make that with this smaller, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You have to say no.
And I think there's just way too many in our industry. Yes. Dudes and gals that just go out there and say, yeah, sure. You know what I mean? Just to get, what did you call them? The Benjamins. Right.
Well done.
Zing, zing. So I think that's exactly what happens. I think then, you know, and there lies in the bad. Oh, we've had this terrible experience with the last, you know, place we worked with.
Oh, I know. How many times have we heard that? But that's where we have seen some success too, is when projects start to go off the rails and people are changing what's going to be done or what they're going to expect. And you say, look, I can't get behind this anymore. This isn't what we signed up for. Sometimes that makes people stop and listen. And they're like, wait a minute, you're not going to finish, or you're not going to do it, or maybe I'm messing up. Maybe I need to. So why? And it sometimes it'll open up the conversation to be like, this is what the effect that it's going to have. I don't think you should do that. And it gets rethought out, and then you do end up with a successful project. And that part's nice, because then you're building a mutual trust over time. But I think that makes it sound like it's an easier conversation than it is to have. Sometimes yeah. If you've got a direct line with the client or the customer, I don't like to say client, it sounds too clinical, but if you've got the direct line with the folks you're working with to try to make something.
Right on.
And it's peer to peer. I don't know the right words to say, but if you've got the direct line in the conversation, you can have those intimate conversations where like, this is going to screw up. You guys don't want to do this. But if you're having the talk with the person on the other side of the fence and they're the only person you have access to, but they have to go up two or three flights, you know, to get things done. That's where you've got the breakdown and you just basically, you get orders. You don't get conversations and the orders rarely result in a good project. If that project is going to have to, if that project is going to have to create emotion in somebody and it's coming, you know, as orders from up the stairs, it's just almost never going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Something's totally lost in translation right there. Right. And that's exactly what happens. It gets stuffed and then the whole thing falls apart. And, you know, I mean,
are we saying that if you have a larger organization and the president or whoever ultimately makes calls is not going to be dealing directly with you, that it's impossible to do good work?
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that that means then you have to be that much more diligent about voicing what the problems are going to be moving forward if you choose to move forward. You know,
and if you can't find a way to at least be heard, then maybe it is with you and that your relationship with that particular organization.
Yeah, it just doesn't
carry forward.
Yeah, it doesn't work, and you don't. You know, and you know they'll need to find someone who's just an order taker, I guess, right? Because there are people out there that will do that.
So going back to the original thing we were talking about, where it wasn't a bitch session that evolved, but we were talking about smaller organizations who are trying to do their own content and how to figure out what to do. And you were saying, and I agree, that basically it's the spaghetti on the wall, right? You got to throw a whole bunch of stuff up, see what sticks for your audience, and then go deeper into that. So what are the main things nowadays that people have to try? So I'm a company. I want more people to know about me, understand why my product is good for them or would enhance or enable their life. What are the things I need to try?
Well, again, we're talking a little bit about checkboxes because, you know, this is very general. So it should be very specific to the company. The company initially should figure out where their audience is hanging out and what they are into. In other words, what kinds of social connections do they make? Do they use a lot of Snapchat? Do they use Periscope? Are they always on Twitter? Are they Facebook fiends? Are they Pinterest fiends? Are they just Instagram fiends? Or is it some combination of those things? Do they hang out in Vimeo or do they hang out at YouTube? Do you know what I mean? I mean, mm-hmm. there's a bunch of different questions to ask there.
And what if they're disconnectors? What if they're people that are not on all of those social networks and don't get their information from social? Because, I mean, social is bigger than ever, but we're also seeing more people separate themselves than ever.
Right. Well, that is true. Except I don't think that if that's true, but I think that those individuals, like a lot of people will disconnect from Facebook, but they still have emails. And a lot of people will disconnect from Twitter, maybe, but they still use, you know, Instagram because the way that Instagram is sort of Instagram in a way is a safe, snuggly space because it's bereft of very loud, horrible opinions all the time. I think it's a safe space for a lot of different reasons, and that just happens to be one. But you know, I think that there's still, and I think what I'm saying is there's still social platforms out there that people, even though they say they are disconnected, are still connected to, that may not be as intense, let's say, as Facebook. which people always are like, I vow to never use Facebook again, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I could completely look, whatever, you know, I totally get behind that. I mean, I'm only on Facebook because, well, we work in the business that we work in, and you know, there are connections I've made there that aren't anywhere else. But I get where people could come from like disconnecting or not being on those platforms. I still feel like even as disconnected as they get, there's like one platform they are still using that they don't associate as being a social platform.
Sure. I mean, digital communications are here to stay. I mean, unless we have a zombie apocalypse, that's staying. I just meant the people that like, there's some people that Periscope is not a thing in their vernacular. They're not aware of it. They're never going to be aware of it. They don't want to be aware of it. But what you're saying, I guess, is that you need to understand who you're talking to and where they are and how they might get information about your company. Right. Because
right.
It's going to be very different how a news organization communicates or a product company. And it's going to depend on the product company, what kind of products and what kind of people buy your products, on how they're getting the information about you. Right. So if you're a person that makes, I don't know, some kind of medical device that helps, or like a new EpiPen or something that's going to make life easier during the summer for parents and kids with allergies, that's a really different thing than if you sell a luxury massage chair that absolutely no one needs, but certain people might be seeking it out, right? You're not going to reach them in the same way. One, right. You're going to be seeking out the people who have a very pointed problem. The other one, you're going to have to find a way to be the answer that people come to when searching for that luxury good thing that they don't actually need.
And you bring me straight back to the other thing that I was saying about being digitally or socially disconnected. Everyone still uses a search engine. And, you know, I don't want to give Google props because they already have plenty of props. But yeah, someone's going to Google it. You know, they're going to look for something. It doesn't matter what the thing is. You could be looking for the hours of operation, to directions, to, you know, asking very long-tailed questions about a thing. And what you said is actually perfect. You as the person or purveyor of product or device or thing need to come up as that person's answer. And so in the end, really, what you need to be is found by Google, right? Or at least up on enough on that search that you come up as one of many answers for that person.
Well, yeah, not even one of many, one of like the first, you know, seven or nine. It can't be one of many. If you're one of the 45 first links, you're not doing anything.
All right. Technically, you need to be on that first page. That would be optimal. That would definitely be optimal. Up before the fold, also optimal.
Well, that kind of brings us full circle, right? So people start blogging and start doing content because they want to be ranked well in search. And then they start doing that formulaic 2 blogs a week to try and rank better in search. And they wonder why they're not ranking. Well, the reason you're not ranking is you're not making good content. You're not making value-based content that's going to resonate with folks in that long tail world, meaning a more personal world. So instead of picking a keyword like family activity and trying to rank for someone searching for family activity, you can focus a lot more on trying to rank for what can I do with my kids today, or what family activities are in New England this weekend. And if you focus on something being much more focused like that, you can actually start to rank. Where if you're a classic old adage is, if you're trying to rank for the terms car insurance, you're not going to, you know, the Geico already does, and they're going to stay there. You have to figure out your niche, what you're actually going to be offering folks, so that when they search for what they're looking for, you're the answer, not the generic broad terms. They're almost not relevant anymore.
No, you're absolutely right. And here's where, right after that happens, here's where quality of the content comes into play, because the other thing that helps with Google understanding you as a valuable source is when people actually read what you're putting out, find it valuable, and therefore share it or link to it. All of those kinds of interlinkings, those cross-linkings between where you've made a connection with somebody and then they share that connection out, that makes you or other other places share or link back to you as a source. Those two things that happen only happen if you have quality content, and those things drive you further up the Google chain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's hard. Quality is it.
It's hard to make quality content. You have to actually dig deep into what and why, and I think a lot of people don't like to do that.
Well, it also requires time, you know? People would like it to be, especially when you don't have enough budget, right? You don't have enough time to spend on it. Well, that's, you know, that is a problem.
Yeah, it's hard.
That goes back to then you really need to really look at, you know, if you have need to focus on what you're saying. And it isn't even about like swamping your blog with 100 blogs a day or 100 posts a day, or as a matter of fact, that would probably be a bad idea. It is really about when you do a blog or a post or a social whatever, you really need to make it valuable. Quality is extremely important. More important than quantity in this case.
I would agree.
And I think that's also just very, very basic human behavior too.
And that's a change in the game because quantity used to matter. And
well, to Google it used to, yeah.
Right, right. And keyword stuffing. And there was a lot of things that people are still stuck on that used to matter and they just don't anymore. But people still spend a lot of time focusing on, okay, what's our keyword set? And they don't focus on actually creating helpful content, which sounds so cliche, but maybe it doesn't to people. Maybe it's cliche to me because we talk about it all the time and we see it. Maybe yeah. It's not. Maybe people don't get it yet.
Yeah. Well, I think people there are a lot of people who are just starting to dip their toes into it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're actually in quite the fledgling little space. Digital space didn't exist until about, what, 20 years ago? I mean, we're not even talking about that long ago. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's only 1918. I mean, 2018, sorry.
It's when?
It's, oh my God. Back in time.
You just said that.
Oh my gosh, shut up. You know what I mean.
If it's recorded, you can't go back now.
I know, I can't even take it back. I was thinking 1998 and so it was 1900s and oh my gosh, the web is a thing. It isn't a thing that everybody uses, but it's a thing. And I thought to myself, holy crap, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. That is so sci-fi. I want to play in that thing. I don't even know what it does yet. Nobody knew what it did yet. But it is this coolest space. What
that's because it we didn't do anything yet. Back I then, know. It didn't really do anything.
But the horizon was endless.
Oh,
what
yeah.
It could do, you know? And so so that sort of just lit me up with like, I need to learn this thing. I want to be doing this thing. I want to be the one that makes stuff in this thing.
So then if we're trying to pretend like we're professionals giving advice, then we need to forget that that a lot of stuff is old hat and maybe talk about it more about, instead of cliche, talk about what it is to make value-based content, which is, I think we've tried to be scratching that off today, but if you're just getting into content, you're just trying to figure out how to grow your brand or connect with people, it really does come back to, you have to dig deep into who the hell are you talking to? And make sure you really know who they are and what they're interested in, what pains them, what makes them tick, what ways can you help make their life easier, more fun, better, you know, whatever your product might do for them. How can you inject yourself? What might they be searching for? And start to create content from that model of what does that person need? What could they possibly need? What might make their life better? That I can give them, that I can, you know, what kind of advice, what kind of how-tos, what kind of knowledge, what can I do to make their day easier, and start doing that every day and creating the content from that standpoint. And that's going to be a much better start than having a regimented, we put out two blogs a week based on, you know, one on this product, one on that product, and we're just going to keep selling so that we hope we get these keywords to rank that product in Google.
Yeah, right. Damn, torpedoes be damned. Oh my gosh. I think you're absolutely right. I think that at its very core is exactly where people's heads need to be when they start to create content, or at least look at what they should be creating. Mm-hmm. You know, in all of this, we've been initially talking about digital. And in fact, bereft of TV, it doesn't have to be all one or the other. It's definitely still a mix out there of things. I think that what needs to happen more is a collaboration between the different silos, the different channels. That if you're going to do radio and TV, and you're going to do print ads, and you're going to do digital, that they need to be on the same page. I mean, that it should be obvious, but it's not. I think that there are different, you know, there are different individuals that handle these different things for some companies, and that there isn't a single voice through those different channels, those media channels, that goes out that makes everybody sort of sync with the brand.
Yeah, it's not just that it should be obvious, and it really should, but it's not that easy, I think, for people to stitch everything together, because when you've got a bunch of different pieces that are supposed to come together to the whole, and they're not all mutually invested in the overall success. They're interested in their success and pointing out how their activity was the most important thing so that you continue to, you know, give them more focus. You're breaking the possibility that you can have everything tied together anyway. There has to absolutely be something uniting everything you're using, or you need to restructure how you're doing it if you have too many pieces in the puzzle, because it has to come together for the overall mission. It can't be, you know, look, we've seen this, you and I personally have seen this with larger organizations where you've got a website and you've got a homepage. You got one homepage, right? And you've got one mission of the homepage if you're talking to the organization. The organization wants the homepage to educate people or interest people or tell them where to park or whatever. The homepage wants people to do, maybe there's three goals, but you know what I mean? There's very few. There's a specific reason to have it. But then you've got this larger organization that has 10 departments, and every department has a reason why they need to have some space. They need an area carved out, even when they don't, right? But they need it because they need to defend their own budgets and their own reasons for being important. And of course, each department thinks it's the one that's important in the organization. And you've got this very real land grab that happens, which is similar but backwards to what you were saying about a bunch of different people that are supposed to be coming together to move something forward. But when they are trying to shine and they're trying to make their contribution better than other contributions instead of part of and helping other contributions, it falls apart. You've got a system that falls apart because they're not working together.
Yeah, and you're right. And part of that, I think a lot of that too has to do with the different disparate channels not understanding what the other one does or how it's valuable. Thinking it's a threat, and maybe having the single voice, whatever the individual is that's guiding all of these channels, not understanding enough about each of the channels and how they work together to make it work together. And it's possible that, you know, if you take a look at some older organizations, that digital is such a new thing to them that it's really, really hard for them to wrap their heads around how to apply the same thinking about who they talk to and how they talk to the digital space.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, even though I don't think it's that different, you know, and that's just because I sort of play in the space all the time, I forget that people that don't play in the space all the time, a director of a company, for instance, has this channel that they don't really understand how to, you know, bring its power to bear, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, they're not quite understanding they know that they, again, need some of these check boxes, but they don't know how to measure the success of any of those things next to what they already understand, maybe something like radio or TV or print. Those things have been doing for years, and then in comes the digital upstart, and how that metric is measured for them is something that's difficult, because they don't really understand. They know all the buzzwords, but they don't really understand what that means. I think that's going to be an educating kind of a thing. I mean, you know, the older we get, the less that's happening, the education part, because, you know.
Yeah, it is still happening, though.
But it totally is still happening.
I was in a meeting recently where an old media, traditional media company, recently, because their business is floundering, they now do digital too. And their pitch was that, well, we do digital as good as any of the digital people, but we also do the traditional. And even the client at the point was like, well, what makes you think that you just do digital? Like, what makes you think you can just start that and just be good at it if you don't have any experience and you don't, well, you know, we just do.
So right. Yeah. Yeah,
that happens. And people are being sold a bill of goods, you know, and they can't know everything. You know, the director of company X you're talking about, whoever that person he or she might be, they have a tough job because they can't be an expert in one thing. They're trying to wrangle a whole bunch of things. And there's a bunch of people that are going to tell them whatever they need to in order to be one of those cogs or to get that sale, right?
Yeah.
But not always going to be the correct information. I don't know.
Or in their best interest, for that matter. I think, not to say that company A was, or the provider, retainer, vendor A was trying to be duplicitous and saying, hey, I can do all things. I am all things to all people, you know. I think they probably genuinely believe that they can do that. The thing is, no offense, okay, all you print designers out there, but I'm about to say this and it's true. You are a print designer and you cannot do digital. I'm sorry. I mean, and the reason being, and why I say this, is that they're two very different, their disciplines are very different in the execution. Okay, we all are designers. Yes, we can be all under that same hat. And so technically, yeah, you can do web design just like I can do print design, but no, because in the actual application and execution, digital design requires, just like in print design, requires the understanding of how the medium is absorbed and used, right? So it's like saying, okay, well, I'm a print designer and everybody knows how to use a book. Your challenge, right, to reach a user to use something is so non-existent. Books have been around for a thousand years. So everyone understands what a book is, what it does, how to flip a page, etc. My digital space changes constantly. And the way that you use it, and what it's used for, how it's used, changes with the wind, with the whim of a user, right? And so understanding that is part of how you design something. You have to understand how it works so you can break it, remake it, make it better. If you print design doesn't, it's not in the same, we're not even on the same, you know, universe if we're talking about how that works, right?
Right.
So it would be the same as saying, like, oh, we do radio, we do TV, and yes, now we do digital. No. I mean, yes, you can make a commercial for digital, and you could reuse that commercial that you just made for the TV spot in digital, but is that really digital?
Right. Like, your nephew's really good with his phone, and he makes awesome movies for his his friends. He can just come in and run your video department, right? It's
Yep, same analogy. Perfect.
So
on that, cousin Vinny.
Yeah. No kidding. On that note, you're mentioning how digital is always changing. Have you seen anything cool lately? Have you seen any shifts or new things, or just anything that you think's interesting lately? I haven't, so I'm curious. I see more of focus on new but existing mediums where they're getting better. You know, the way it's utilized, mm-hmm. as opposed to seeing, like, holy shit, another social network or another new channel or another new thing.
No, I don't think, that's interesting you mentioned that. Because, in fact, you're right. I haven't really noticed new, another Facebook, another rival to Facebook, or, you know what I mean? I don't think the space could stand it to have one more social, you know, Snapchat out there, or Vine or, you know, Periscope, or I think that the major three or four are probably what they're doing is sort of scooping up any of the new little guys and incorporating them within their own, you know, with their own platforms, in the same way that, you know, that Facebook and or Google and YouTube have become like the best. They're, you know, one and the same now. They're the best of friends. It's just, you know, it's just that's sort of just, you know, the bigger guys have the budgets to be able to then just enlarge their platforms, and they see what the little apps are doing out there and just incorporating them into their platforms, until you're going to get like five big platforms and there you go. I don't know if that's good or bad. That's like a whole other conversation. What I do see, and you know, and that's good in a way, because it enhances those platforms. So Facebook becomes even better because now it does live video or whatever, you know, or it has Instagram, you know, connections. It, you know, Twitter does video. I mean, that's cool. Wow. You know, Instagram now has like ways to show advertising on there and to connect product to actual pages. And Pinterest, same thing. It was just like a little collection of images, and it's become a little more powerful now. It is a way for people who have products for other people that wouldn't even have ever seen them before to get involved in looking at their product and sharing the product and being able to click and be linked back to the product in a more positive and active way. So there's a lot of that going on. I think that's really interesting. Like platforms that never had connections back to commercial spaces like Instagram or Pinterest now have that ability. I think that's really interesting. I think that the next... And I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound weird, but I think the next place is trying to figure out how ads and mobile actually will function and work. Because right now, you know, they don't.
No, they don't.
But because they don't, that space, that's a ripe space for an explosion in ingenuity and creativity. Something a user actually wants. And getting them to actually use it in an ad space kind of a way. There's some movement in there, and I can't talk about it because I haven't read all the articles on it yet to actually say anything that's interesting. Except that I see that there's space there, that there's room for growth there, and that's interesting. So you've got to watch that space.
There's definitely room there for innovation in like ad tech, right? Because there's billions of eyes, literally. There's people that marketers want to market to, but really, we haven't gotten any less annoying than a banner ad since banner ads were invented, right? And the banner ad was just a more annoying version of a TV commercial.
Yeah, I know. See, and that's an example. I really believe that it is an example of a old school, right, approach applied to digital that doesn't work because it's not the same. They're apples and oranges, and therefore they're not the same thing. And you can't expect the user to absorb them the same way because they don't have to, you know?
Right.
So there's that space. I also see AR becoming, it's not there. It's not there. I don't know when it'll be there. Another 5 years, maybe.
Oh, it's going to get there though.
But it is so coming, and that is going to be fascinating. The projection of augmented reality onto the surface of things or into space itself in front of you is like a huge idea. And Matt, you know how we were talking before about how we didn't want to have printed cards, because like, what does somebody do with those cards? But they take them because it's nice, it's polite, and then they just toss them, or they throw them in a corner and they never see them again. And so your card is like this wasted paper thing that nobody actually uses, because what they do is they actually take your number and they put it in their phone, or they look you up online and they link into you, or they, whatever they do, it is something completely different that doesn't require the paper thing. And I kept trying to trying to rack my brain around like how could I make something that was relevant, right? That would impart the same information, but be much more relevant in our, you know, technologically advanced digital world. That would make more sense. That would feel better, and that would be useful. And I was just looking at, it's not there yet by any means, but Apple is coming out with this AR kit, right? That will allow someone to project from the paper product. So the card, you have to, right now, it actually gets put in front of a phone that's using an app, right? The app then projects out all the information from the card in like a 3D space.
Yeah.
So it's not there, but it looks very really there. So it's like this augmented reality thing. And it's kind of cool. It's a little game-like, you know, in the way that it works. But it still requires that you have like paper or an app that triggers the action. So what needs to happen is the step needs to happen where I don't need to actually give them a card necessarily. Or maybe if it's a card, it's something different. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is yet.
And you won't need to in a few years, right? When people are actually dipping in and living in augmented reality, at least for extended periods of time, where like right now it's clunky. You know, you put on the VR headset, and people that really have the means or are really into it, there's things like immersion tanks so that you have zero gravity, and then you take that with the augmented reality of today, and you know, you can feel like you're flying, you can put yourself in other worlds, but it's still looks totally fake, right? But we're not far off when you can trick your mind entirely and just be living in a different world. So then how do you then, if you're a marketer, so that's another whole show we could just talk about AI, crazy that life is going to be. And that's an interesting topic, whether good or bad, just the fact that it's going to be amazing. But as the marketer, knowing that's coming, so what is it going to be? Just more billboards in the digital city that's being invented in the person's mind to walk down the street?
It can't be though. See, and that's the thing. It can't be because it'll fail, just like banner ads fail. You know, people do them. There's a percentage of people that might click on them, but they are not the thing they were touted to be when they started. In the same way that like QR codes, they could have been listen to me, like they could have been something cool. If someone had really considered how they were going to be used and paired them, let's say with the product, for instance, like let's say you go down to Sears and there's like seven washing machines all in a row. They look freaking the same to me. I don't know. But each of them has a QR code, and that QR code activates on your phone a whole little mini site that will, with maybe a guy that talks you through the benefits of each of the things that you're looking at, tells you exactly what they do. Are they energy safe? What does that mean? You can, in other words, it allows you to get, you helps you, the user, this is where we're going, helps you, the user, get more information about a thing that you want to do. In this case, I want to purchase a washing machine. I don't know how to do that. No, that's not how they use the QR code. They did something stupid with it. They said, oh, here, use this QR code. And then it clicked to something flat and stupid. Like
they clicked to, like a, here, now like give a, us your email.
Yeah, like a, and or it was a paper flyer that you got at the end of it that looked like something like your cousin Vinny made. So, lame, fail, terrible. And then what happens? People are like, this is lame. I'm never using this. And guess what happens? QR codes get killed. They don't get used. Yeah, nobody uses it because it's a lame sauce thing now.
It would be better to deliver the information or the user experience that somebody might want. And you're just talking about doing it on demand. So like right now, that's what the web is, right? We pull out the supercomputer that's in our pocket while we're standing in Sears. I don't think people go to Sears anymore, though.
I know. That's sad, right? Aren't they closing?
I don't know. But
yeah, no, not sad. All of them are closed yet, but they are definitely on the way of the dodo.
Definitely. Let's say they're at Lowe's then. And there's 30 washer and dryers or whatever it is. Right now, they can pull out your supercomputer and you can Google it and you can find all that information. But it's not pointed, and you have to search, and you're going to have to dig to do the research. You're talking about forget QR codes, but a better way to do it, if you're the brand, is plan how to deliver the personalized experience on demand that folks are looking for when they might be looking for it, like that in-market example. So if you know there's confusion among those washer and dryers and there's, you know, 10 different brands and five models from each one, maybe you put that sign on it with a specific URL or a specific, you know, whatever it might be for the solution, and you deliver the answer to the question haunting them is, how do I decide which one of these I'm supposed to buy?
Screw it. Don't put it. Don't even send them somewhere else. I say we have touchscreens now. Just make it a really cool interactive experience. Make it actually happen right there. Like give it, I mean, I don't know why we don't, maybe it's the expense. We have motion technology. We have all kinds of interspatial environmental detection technologies that allow us to know if someone walked in a room, where their hands are, facial recognition, so we can know what they look like, what their emotions are. I mean, there's like so much we can do that we aren't doing with the little stuff that we do know how to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, some sort of an environmental kiosk or something that's you know, there that someone could then visit would be the coolest thing. I would totally use that. I would totally use it because it was a freaking cool thing. Forget, you know what I mean? Forget asking it anything, but that it could deliver actual information about what I wanted and then make it useful for like a bunch of products. I think that is like, I should take this idea right now at Home Depot, man. We could put like a kiosk, I'm not trying to replace human interaction either. If you want to ask about, you know, Charlie or Larry about what set of 2x4s you need to make whatever you're making your chicken coop, then, you know, you should definitely interact with a human for this. But let's face it, you know, sometimes you don't want to interact with a human. I mean, most of us just want to go in there and try and figure it out, you know, or go in there with a plan and then fail because we don't know what we're doing.
The problem with that too, I think, is a human problem. And it used to be you'd go to your neighborhood hardware or lumber store or your neighborhood appliance store, and you could ask Bob about what the difference in the appliances. But a lot of those stores are gone nowadays because we like the convenience and the efficiencies of the Home Depots, the Lowe's, the Walmarts, the Targets, whatever it might be. But a lot of the Best Buys. But with that comes that you can't ask a human. Sure, there's one standing there saying, "Can I help you?"
Yeah, but they don't know.
But they don't know, right? They don't know they don't have any depth to the information to actually get the answers. Like, so I think
here's the nail section. Like, so if I couldn't find it, they'd know where it was, but then that's where it ends.
Right. They don't know what nails you need or why. Yeah. And there's then that problem with, so it's probably a better way to create some sort of a digital experience. And I think your kiosk one is interesting, but I think there's the cost of putting kiosks everywhere, but I think kiosks got killed just like QR codes, because there were too many kiosks for a period of time that didn't do shit. They just, you know, half the time they wouldn't work. You're pressing on the screen and nothing happens. And I think there was too many where people are just like, I don't know. I wouldn't touch one if it's sitting there. I think I would just glide right past it. But if there were some interesting message, you know, maybe it's just a really interesting graphic or message on the see-through window part of a washer and dryer, like we were talking about, that somehow really grabs my attention and tells me exactly where to look for the answer I need. You just something to get the attention short of the, you know, AR or having it wired right into the chips in our brain and sending us messages. I think there's, but that just goes back to content. That's, we're not talking about changing technology. We're now talking again about who you're talking to, what's their problem,
and what, why,
and help them find an answer. And
right.
Maybe,
and why
maybe your machine is not the answer, but help them find the answer they need, and then they'll think of you next time.
Yeah, because you help them find the answer. Honestly, content. I mean, it's why QR codes, it wasn't that it didn't function, right? It's because the individuals who employed the QR code, when you actually went to get the content sucked.
Yep.
And so QR code fail. Content failed QR, you know? That is what failed it. The lack of ingenuity, invention, creativity, and quality of content. And in and kiosks, same freaking thing. It is what you got out of it, you know? It wasn't, it should have been, you know, something engaging, cool. It should have been able to help you. But I mean, instead, it was probably more like a little stupid video of another commercial that you didn't want to hear. Like, that's not helpful, you know?
Definitely. And since we just came full circle all the way to augmented reality back to you still need to know what the hell you're trying to say to somebody before you can say anything. I think that's a good place to call this baby because I got to go. It's 4 o'clock and I've got to move on to my next piece of business. So
yeah, me too, boy.
This was fun. It's been too long since you and I got to team up and do one of these, and we have to do it more often, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
This was fun. And I think one of our next ones should be just AR and talking through our assholes that we don't know, because I think it's cool. And it's
actually, cool. Yeah, because I want to tell you about all the cool things I discovered about AR, because it's sort of something that's, to me, just like it's going to be the next thing, and it's so exciting. Just
you know,
exciting.
You know what, then? Why don't we do this? We'll do it next week. And we'll do one, we'll do a video podcast and you can basically, we'll do a screen share and we can have the audio and talk about it, but you can show me all this crazy stuff and then we can actually have something to look at, discuss, and then all the folks on the other end of this thing can see what we're talking about.
Okay. All right. I think that's actually an awesome idea.
Boom. Mind blown. Well, if it works, we'll see if it works.
I guess we'll see.
All right, kiddo. Then that, I'm out and thanks. This is fun.
Yeah, thanks. Fun for you. Fun for me too. I'll talk to you later.